This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.
November 9th, 2019. This is Spingola Speaks, and this is Deanna Spingola, broadcasting from the Chicago suburbs. I appreciate you joining me today at republicbroadcasting.org. You may visit my website, excuse me, at spingola.com, where you can have access to the radio schedule page. Just click the radio schedule button on the left, and if you wish to ask questions or make comments during the program, email comment@spingola.email. That is comment@spingola.email. I only answer that email address 3 hours a week during the program. You can join others in the chat room at spingola.chatango.com. The archives for this program may be found at spingolaspeaks.net and republicbroadcasting.org. And it's very important if you want to re-listen to the program. Those are the two places that I recommend that you do it at. My guest the first 2 hours today is Robert Strock. He is the author of Awareness That Heals, Bringing Heart and Wisdom to Life's Challenges. His main website is awarenessthatheals.org. He also has the other one, theglobalbridge.org. Dr. Robert, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much. Good to be here.
Well, it's wonderful to have you on the program. At your website, I'm very interested in the things that you have there, awarenessthatheals.org. You have guided meditations, which I think are just really wonderful, wonderful things. And there's one for, excuse me, for most of the chapters in the book. And I really do think that meditation is a very important thing, particularly, well, it just helps you to become aware. And I started meditating, over a year ago, and you don't realize A person does not realize how uninvolved they are with their feelings and their own awareness until they stop all the outside influences and really become aware of who and where they're going.
Well, it would be hard to argue with that. I've been meditating for probably 50 years, 70. So I got off to an early start, and I think meditation is certainly a key element of getting a perspective from the way we're just shot out of the cannon in our culture as to how we believe is going to make us happy, make us fulfilled, inspired.
It is amazing that, every evening, I used to have, the TV on, and, even though I wasn't watching it, it was just noise. And instead of having the TV on, for the last 2 hours before I go to bed, I play very nice, soothing music, and it's just made so much difference in the way that I feel. And I listen to some guided meditations, and it's just, if you listen to all of the drama on TV, especially the news, it's all bad, it's all delivered as if it were just groundbreaking. All the stations say the same thing, and it's kind of alarming. It makes you, it takes you away from yourself, and it's just not very helpful as far as being aware of your own feelings and being able to being able to become aware of what your goals are, where you're going, who you are, sometimes I think that people aren't even aware of their feelings. What you talk about in the first chapter of your book is that you're not even aware of your unawareness. We just seem to exist with a lot of static noise around us.
Yeah, I try really hard to stay with the affirmative, which is that it's really important to be aware that we're all unaware, and start with a little bit of humility as we try to expand our awareness, and then gradually move it from a place of realizing that most of us have what I would call fleeting awareness, where we have moments or insights about what would be a more fulfilling life when we're angry and we're dumping it on somebody and it's not going to be helpful, when we're insecure but we're not going to tell anybody, when we're anxious and we're embarrassed about it. And then the key thing being bringing a part of us that wants to care for ourselves and others while we feel and stay aware of what we're feeling. Now that may or may not sound simple, but imagine yourself feeling afraid or angry, and at that same time, you have the presence to take a few beats, or if you're in a situation, several minutes or an hour or two, and really ask, how can I care for myself and those that are involved here while I'm afraid, not to fix it, but to coexist with it as a process? Because I think that the idea of fixing things is overwhelmingly overrated, whereas the reality of being aware of being human in these states and these feelings is so important. But equally important is, how do we take care of ourselves when we're afraid, when we're angry, or we're hurt, we're injured, we feel rejected? So that simultaneity of being aware of our feeling, our feelings, and being really interested in wanting to care is really what the first chapter of the book's about. And then the next seven are practical, different strategies to care for ourselves and those that we love, and hopefully even beyond those that we love, to be able to zero into that.
And these are very interesting concepts, in that prior to my meditating and really trying to figure out what my feelings were, I think that certain feelings get locked into our bodies and we're just existing without being aware that some of those feelings can be very unhealthy and can cause illnesses for us, can cause lifelong illness, can lead to various illnesses that we could avoid. For instance, anger. If somebody is always angry and never recognizing that, it could destroy them in a more physical way because of the illnesses that can occur with a person who is consistently angry, or just on the opposite side, or a person who lives in constant fear. Those feelings get locked into your body, and your body remembers those feelings. Your mind might not be aware, but your body is. Your body has a memory. And, for instance, if you forget a password, or if you forget a phone number, all you have to do is go to the phone and your body will remember the password, or it will remember the phone number. Because your body does have a memory. And I think that those feelings that we may have, can be very destructive unless we meet them and figure out how to become aware of them and take care of us. And by taking care of negative feelings, we're taking care of us. Am I correct?
Yeah, and hopefully others as well. I mean, one of the things that I've done in the book is identify 75 challenging feelings to help be a bit more literate for all of us to be able to see, gee, I don't know what I feel. I know I don't feel good, but what is it? And when you see the 75 feelings, not to in any way portray that there are only 75 feelings, but it's a good start. And then on the other end, in addition to an emotional suffering literacy, there's another chart that is identifying 75 compassionate or healthy or healing qualities or actions that can help take care of us. So being able to have a resource, which frankly, it's sad that it's not in our kindergarten, let alone high school or college, that there's just a simple identification with a number of feelings and a simple identification with a number of qualities that are the ones that really help us. And if we can start to identify these feelings clearly, which with the help of a roadmap, it's not even a roadmap, it's really just single words that are all obvious once you see them on a page. And then ask yourself, well, what is that I really need to help take care of myself and or those that are involved in the situation that my feelings are connected to? When you start to get into a rhythm, kind of like being in a rhythm of meditation, or let's say a practice of meditation or a practice of inquiry, of asking yourself, given I feel this one of the 75, which ones of the other 75 that are the needs or the qualities or the healing, the essential ways to care for myself, which ones of these would be most helpful? And then what are the strategies to move me in that direction? And it's very important that, I believe it's very important that people look for healing directions that they're committed to and not for erasers. Like, okay, got that one fixed. But be able to really be devoted to say, you know, I'd like to be aware of myself. It's not very esoteric. It's just a simple, pragmatic, maybe not simple, but let's say simple to understand, pragmatic way of saying, oh, this is what I'm feeling. And these are the kinds of directions I'd need to move And like any part of life, if we're committed to it, we're going to be able to develop. But it's not going to happen as a gift of being born or getting an education or even being successful in the world. It requires personal awareness, and it requires finding a place inside you that wants to care and then implement the wanting to care in hopefully a very realistic what's possible the next hour, today, this week, not some abstract philosophical approach that is not reachable in the near future, which is bound to discourage one if one doesn't feel like they have a chance. So I oftentimes mention that kindergartners would be in a better place to understand the majority of the book if the words were made slightly simpler, but not much, because they didn't lose touch with things like tone of voice, or they know when they're mad. You know, they know when they're coming up to their mom, whether their mom is going to give them a hug or is going to freeze them out in some way. As adults, we tend to be losing touch with our feelings. We tend to be losing touch with our tones of voice. And we tend to be losing touch with the simple ways that we can feel better.
Exactly. The and you identify, and people can look at this list. You have on your website awarenessatheals.org/introspective guides, where people can view those feelings. And honestly, we just really don't recognize. Most people do not, do not recognize feelings beyond the regular feelings like anger and you've just expanded everything so that it opens people up to other ideas that they quite possibly have never held before. And you just gave an example of a mother, and these guides, they're just amazing. Who knew that we had that many feelings?
Yeah.
But each of those feelings are real, and it's just amazing how you have expanded things to catch everybody. Just I'm really impressed with the list that you have, and I just posted the link to those guides in the chat room for those who would like to see them. They're very impressive, and you have things there that I simply would not have even thought about.
Yeah, and yet I'm guessing in your momentary awareness, you've probably been aware of all of them, and you know, it, for a flashpoint.
Right.
And it's important, you know, that the whole motive of the book is nonprofit. It's connected to the foundation that we have. The guides on the site are free. The guided meditations are free. So I'm not here trying to sell a book. I'd be happy if people wanted to buy the book, but the main thing is our world is profoundly suffering. Our country is profoundly suffering. And if whatever any of us can do in being resourceful on a personal level to find a greater caring, the better.
Absolutely. Alrighty, we are going to a quick 3-minute break. We'll be right back.
It starts with you and me. It starts with you and me. We all can be heroes believe, to change the bad to good, to live in harmony. It starts with you and me.
Alrighty, this is Deanna, and I am back with my guest today for the first 2 hours, Robert Strock. He is the author of Awareness That Heals, Bringing Heart and Wisdom to Life's Challenges. I'd like to make you aware of the foundation that he mentioned, and one may view the foundation, information about the foundation at theglobalbridge.org, and his website that talks about awareness that heals is awarenessthatheals.org. And it's very obvious to me that you care a great deal about people, and that, as you said, you're not in this to make money, but rather to assist people to feel better about themselves and each other. And this foundation is, it looks like it is doing some really wonderful work. After all, we all live on the planet, and certainly we need to be not destroying it, but to be helping others. And I can certainly see that that is your goal, and I think it's really remarkable, just really remarkable.
Thank you for that. It seems almost remarkable that it isn't the norm. That we all, especially at this time when it's become obvious that we're imperiled as a country and as a world with global warming and with the politics being as crazy as they are right now. And even before that, just war itself, all the things that every generation has faced where things don't quite work. And that leaves us in a feeling state. And it leaves us in a place that maybe we feel helpless, maybe we feel scared, maybe we feel frustrated. And being able to start in that personal way and knowing that we want to care is that universal principle. It doesn't matter what language we're starting from. It doesn't matter what country we're starting from. And if we don't find that place that wants to care, and we're just simply either consciously or unconsciously emotionally reactive in a negative way, then we're hurting ourselves. As you said, it's reinforcing illnesses. It's reinforcing suffering in ourselves and everyone else around us. And so it seems like if we can, and again, as you mentioned with meditation, if you have a little bit of space where you can have some reflection, wouldn't you rather care? Doesn't that seem like a pretty intuitively evident place that you'd like to care for yourself and learn how to implement that as much as possible today, this hour, the way you're thinking about it yourself, the tone of voice you're using, the people around you? And I don't mean it in a 0 to 100, we've arrived sense, but more wherever you're starting from is perfectly unchangeable. You start there, hopefully. You know, if we start where we are, we're as good as we can be. If we ignore where we are, then we're adding suffering to where we are. So the starting point is always where we are, and being aware of it, and then hopefully knowing intuitively through practice that we want to bring caring to it. And that's it seems, again, it's like something I would have learned in kindergarten, but there was wasn't any resource for it in school and religion and any of the institutions that we faced. That was not a learning ground. So the idea really is in the site and the foundation is to start with that basic principle. Like in the foundation, we're aware of what we feel, which most foundations feel like, gee, there's global warming or there's illness or there's threat of nuclear war or any of the number of things that are there. That scares me. Well, how can I help? And then the foundation makes its mission statement and they do their best to help. That's a good example of the same principle in the book that's focusing more on the inner world. But I'm also focusing equally in the outer world in something I call psychopolitics.
And Right.
So that's a whole other realm that's as focused in the outer world as it is in the inner world. In fact, the majority of my time right now is liaising with other foundations that are doing great work, and they clearly care. They clearly are aware. Let's say their caring is more obvious that that's there. Whether they're aware of what they feel or not isn't always the case, but they're shot out of a cannon to say, how can I help the ocean? How can I help the air? How can I help the rivers? How can I help the world have a better chance to survive? So this idea of starting where you are and then finding a place that wants to care and that can care is equally true to the inner world as the outer world.
Right. And it just, it seems like politics is all about, I'm very anti-war. I don't think that we were placed upon the earth to kill each other. I just think that if you harm one group of people, you're really detracting from yourself. So it's just like we're harming a part of our body if we go in and attack a nation and slaughter people and slaughter their or destroy their culture and artifacts. And it just seems so it's just awful. I just think it's really, really terrible. And I do believe that we were placed on the earth to see how we would interact with each other and the political machinery that goes on that collaborates in these wars where millions of people are displaced or slaughtered is just profoundly terrible.
Yeah.
And ill-conceived and so unnecessary. It's like destroying your arm or another part of your body. It's just, to me, it's inconceivable that people who are supposedly nice people or Christians, quote unquote, would behave in such a manner.
A couple nights ago, I went to a gathering with the International Medical Corps, which is a group we've been partnering with for a dozen years, every year. And they go to the worst crises in the world on a regular basis, 7,000 doctors, that, you know, whether it's in Somalia or Sudan or Pakistan or Afghanistan or whichever country, whatever hurricane has just wiped out Puerto Rico or any worse tragedy where death is happening either through man's actions or nature's, let's say, tragedies. Being devoted to put their own lives at risk, like the military, not always for the same completely justified cause, but still heroically. When anyone puts their life on the line, I spend half the time there crying, not primarily out of grief, but primarily out of feeling like these are the people that I so naturally am moved and touched by, that they're devoting their lives in a way that puts their lives at risk. And there are many, many people who are doing that in the world, and it's going to require that to probably be 100 times stronger over the next 50 years from these reports that I see and most of us see in the primary news that seems to be agreed upon throughout the world, just to do with global warming, to say nothing of nuclear war or terrorism. And so each of us has a chance to face that and to see what little things we can do. It doesn't have to be big things, whether it's recycling or whether it's, you know, helping being friendly to a homeless person, or whether it's, even though it's intuitively obvious, it isn't actionable on a regular basis. Success is more important than caring in most cultures. And somehow we need to balance that out. There's nothing wrong with success as long as it's not completely narcissistic success. But there's a lot wrong with, or a lot dangerous with, anything that is devoid of caring. And as you're saying, the horrors of war are unfathomable. And the closer you come to vets or people that have been in the war, or if you've been in the war yourself, it's totally indescribable. I mean, it's so graphically nauseating and incredulous. And how could any two people want to kill each other?
Right.
It's one thing. The only time I could ever identify with it was if you truly have a Hitler and they're going to have a gun pointed at you and you want to protect yourself. Okay, fair enough. But if you have these gray areas, which is what most of what we're facing is, how to not want to solve it on a level of diplomatic strategy or communication to best capacity and boundaries and sanctions and whatever needs to be done. But the idea of actually putting lives underground and killing people is the basis of the human side. And is obviously not dwelled in. How do I care for this population that's not like ours? One of the things that I believe is so important, and for those that have watched Game of Thrones, they had a couple of lines a couple of weeks in a row that got to the principle of, I will not blame good people whose parents or father were evil people. I will not blame the good people and carry the history forever and keep battling and fighting with countries that have that history. I'm going to attempt to be present enough with leaders of the world to face the challenges that we're facing together now, and not say, oh, you killed my, in the show that they were talking about, and we saw it earlier seasons, that the populations being slaughtered mercilessly, and yet these leaders rose to the level of seeing, if we carry this on our backs forever, destructiveness is going to bring us all down.
Right.
If we don't have that, let's say, enlightened mind, at least to the degree of, we can't keep carrying anger just because our fathers and grandfathers and their grandfathers had that history. We've got to take a fresh look at what are we facing in the world now as individuals and as leaders. We can't blame our leaders for the vast majority of what's happened, because we need to vote. We need to participate. We need to recognize, unless we're in a complete survival struggle ourselves, and we have to put all of our energy into survival. For those of us that are not in that situation, activating that place that wants to care, seeing how we can interface with those that we know, seeing how we can expand groups, seeing how we can find organizations that we might want to support, seeing how we can organize our lives through that caring is just gold. It's the real gold. The other gold is fine, but it's, I'm not sure it's fool's gold, but it's semi-fool's gold.
Right. yes, it is an amazing thing. Your charts are so amazing. It just never previously occurred to me all the different feelings. And as you mentioned, you've been looking at this for 50 years.
Yeah.
And I should have been looking at these kinds of things and becoming aware, but there's so much going on outside of ourselves. All the clutter and clatter and noise, that goes on. Okay. I gave an example. I said, even though I don't necessarily watch TV, I just have it on. Why have it on? You think that you're not paying any attention to it. Then if you're not paying any attention to it, then you probably should not have it on, but just have some quiet time. And I know that with all of the social media and all the other things people are engaged in, it seems that despite the fact that people are out there and befriending a lot of people that they probably will never see and never really be friends with, I think that we really need to be friends with ourselves first and evaluate where we're coming from and just figure ourselves out first and turn off the white noise and really consider what kind of a human being can I be? Where are my priorities? How can I assist others if I don't even know how to be with myself, how to react to others? And you have such a lengthy list of these feelings that we might have that I just never thought about before.
Sure. I mean, for example, when you say something like, I should have, taken a look at this before, I think one of the most important things is bringing a lot of support to yourself when you're even starting to look or looking for a while, and just appreciate that you're looking, because we can, let's say, for example, feel inadequate or ashamed, and that can be a bottomless quicksand. And then we'll say, well, I can't tolerate this because I'm already 40 years old and I haven't really looked, and so I don't want to look now. No, if anything, you deserve the most credit for the later you start. If you started younger, it was easier, more intuitive, and you had the advantage of getting some momentum. But if you have the courage to start at any age, and maybe at first you will feel embarrassed or ashamed or guilty or inadequate, but then you say, well, what can I do now? How can I really support myself to start from here? And have the courage and the precision to see what I'm feeling and to really look at which of these needs, which of these actions, which of these qualities could I possibly respond with realistically in the next day or two, or the next hour, or the next week, and take it in the present and the near future in as gentle a way as possible, so that you recognize you're not coming from guilt or pressure and pushing yourself to be a better person. You're going to a place that's softer in your core, that's more intuitive, that is a wanting. It's like one of the things I say to my clients. I've been a therapist for 47 years. One of the things I say to my clients is when they become aware of something, they almost always will say, gee, so you think I should do this? And my reframe of that, restating that in a different way is, you get a chance to do that. You know, this is a gift. This is your smarts showing up, and you get to give yourself this rather than impale yourself with guilt or more inadequacy or more sounds or more entertainment that really was taking you in a direction you didn't really want to go, but you didn't really, in a sense, deeply know any better. You might have superficially, in a fleeting sort of way, known better. So forgiveness and acceptance and even tolerance of wherever you've been in the past as never being a disqualifier for starting now.
Right. Start from where you're at. Right. Given that that the number of news entities has been reduced over the last, well, since the Reagan era, from 87 different networks, different news entities, down to 5, I think that we have to ask ourselves, is everything that we hear on these news programs the truth, or are these things just broadcast out to engender or to initiate or create fear in something that isn't really true? Are there crises that are developed or created in order to make us fear what is going on, when perhaps what is going on is a natural phenomenon, or perhaps it isn't even in existence at all?
Yeah. I mean, there are so many news sources that are reinforcing conspiracies and completely fictitious so-called facts or stories. And then there are some very noble, courageous, moving sources of news. Not many, but some. And I think that being able to suss out and cross-corroborate with combination of Google and, good news sources like yours and sources that really are more oriented toward what can be done to allow our democracy to work, what can be done to allow our world to work. If you're inclined in any direction, going on and looking up foundations that are close to your heart, close to something that would move you, maybe close geographically to you or capable of supporting them at a distance. I think we all have a possibility. I know we all have a possibility of, once we drop into our experience, if we listen carefully enough, if we're sad, we want to be happy. If we're frightened, we want to be courageous. If we're angry, down deep, this is more subtle, we do want to find a way of being peaceful with the other person as well. That's more complicated because anger oftentimes thinks it just wants to strike out. And at first glance, anger does want to strike out. At second glance, there is a need that was violated that made us angry in the first place. And if we can discover what that need is, if someone treated us hostily and we're angry back, then the need was we wanted to be treated more kindly or with more consideration or with better communication. And if we can go for the need rather than against what we don't like, we can find that place that is going to be more beneficial. And there are networks that have more of a tendency to be looking at what's the next move that could possibly make it a saner world. And there are obviously networks that are the opposite of that, that are constantly fear-based or anger-based, destructively based. And so it's very, very important to be discerning. Does this feel like it's just riling me up? Or is it trying to support me to mobilize, to be caring in some way? And to ask ourselves that question when we're not only watching news, but watching a movie. If it moves us in a way that's going to help us in some way be more aware and a more sensitive human being, great. It's true with athletics as well. We can participate in any aspect of life and have it be blindly competitive or blindly anything. Or we can try to do our best. You know, one of the mottos that I like best is, are you making your best efforts to take care of yourself and those you care about? And at times it's only yourself if you're playing a sport. You know, maybe you're playing your best, you're concentrating, but you're also not getting so competitive that you're becoming a negative force with those around you or inside yourself, that you're just trying to focus that and steer that competition in a healthy way. But newscasts, you really have to listen. And really another way of saying it is you get to listen to see whether or not, is this really something that's just going to sink my ship or scare the hell out of me or just make me angrier? Or is this something that maybe will help reinforce what I really need?
Interesting. All righty. We are going to a commercial break and we'll pick this up on the other side. So stay with us. We'll be right back. All righty. We are back. This is Deanna and our guest today is Dr. Robert Strock. He is the author of Awareness That Heals, Bringing Heart and Wisdom to Life's Challenges. The websites are awarenessthatheals.org and theglobalbridge.org. And previously you mentioned, the movies, watching a good movie, and incrementally we have seen the movies that have been feel-good movies turn into really violent movies, sexual oriented movies, just really terrible, terrible movies that do not really inspire or do anything to us, but seem to be produced for a particular reason, which I can't think of why some of this stuff has come out. It certainly doesn't seem to engender any feelings of a positive nature.
Yes. Yes. Well, I mean, unfortunately, because from early upbringing, most of us are oriented toward excitement and not connection. One of the things that's understood by portion of psychology is that if you're very connected to your usually mother or primary caregiver, that increases the chances that you will be pursuing connection in your world as it goes out. But if you miss that, then the number one, let's say, substitute for that is excitement. And so excitement starts to be everything from bombs blasting to fights to struggles, going off into relief of fantasy. And if, on the other hand, even if you intuitively understand connection as being something desirable, you look at a moment when you felt most connected to the one you love. Maybe you're making love. Maybe you were holding your child. Maybe you were having a best friend moment. Maybe somebody in your family and you were really there for each other. That principle of connection is something very simple, but yet very profound. So I think when you're talking about movies or television series, entertainment, music, there are ways in which all of those things can foster connection and can kind of improve our radar when we understand, you know, connection being one of those 75 qualities that I have in the list that are really going to be healing. And that, those kinds of things, just even understanding what kind of qualities do I want to bring in my life so that I have a better chance of being content, happy, fulfilled, inspired, motivated, looking forward to getting up in the morning. What's it going to take? And again, it's never too late. You know, I'm hoping that your listeners would never feel disqualified.
Right. All right. We are at the top of the hour. We will be right back with our guest and maybe take some calls. We'll be right back.
Listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.
Our guest for the first 2 hours, and he is Dr. Robert Strock. He is the author of Awareness That Heals, Bringing Heart and Wisdom to Life's Challenges. And of course, most people aren't aware of what they don't know. They grow up and whatever their experience has been is what they know. And, so what you're doing with the book, I believe, is that you are attempting and have probably brought a lot of people to the knowledge of exactly what's important, why it's important, that in order to reach out to others, to connect with others, these are the things that need to happen, that may happen. And this is the way that it is happening or can happen. And, it's just very interesting, to have this awareness. And, I'm just still amazed at the number of feelings because, as we grow up, if we're just faced with maybe 5 or 6 emotions, and that's what we limit ourselves to feeling or dealing with, that we are unable to expand our possibilities and to look at everything. For instance, gratitude. There are, I've listened to a lot of Dr. Joe Dispenza's audios. In fact, I took his online course, and he talks about feeling gratitude. And a lot of people, despite the fact that they might have a lot to be grateful for, or they might have a lot to be grateful for if they actually evaluated what they have in their lives, it would really expand their horizons as far as that particular feeling is concerned.
Yeah, and it's very helpful to see what's in the way. Now, for example, it may not only be asking yourself, how can I access gratitude, but then when you dig a little deeper, you see that, well, I'm spending my energy wanting more success, wanting to be liked more, wanting this, wanting that, in my life. And that wanting, or for that matter, I hate this political party. I'm angry at this. All of our either for or against passionately takes up the space to be able to sit quietly enough to see, gee, maybe I wasn't born in a country that has war. That's really something to be grateful for. I have no idea how I even got here. The mystery of the universe, of how birth even works, how the universe works. Those kinds of questions don't have the space to be contemplated where, not that we have answers, but we see the mystery of not really knowing how we got this opportunity to have relative free will, at least. And that would lead ourselves naturally to be grateful to have these choices, and perhaps not to be born in the very worst situations in life, where at best we can survive, and some people don't even have a chance to survive. Not feeling grateful out of guilt, but feeling grateful out of just seeing that, God, I have a bed to sleep in, or I get to choose foods I want, or I get to take a vacation once in a while, or I get to have, choose my friends, or I don't have to duck my head because there's aren't bombs coming my way. But what it really does take is a little bit of interest to ask yourself, what's going on and how do I really make the best of it? And to a large extent, if you could really imagine being raised in a family, and I really ask you, Deanna, it's like, if you imagine yourself being raised in a family, and then in preschool or kindergarten or first grade, wherever you started, they said, okay, here are the 5 key feelings. And then maybe by third grade, it was 10 key feelings, and maybe by fifth grade, it was 15. And you had age appropriate, and here's how you could take care of yourself. And let's take a few seconds just to ask ourselves. And you had one class where it was social education or personal awareness education. And you were taught that not only does it matter to succeed or to be smart, but to care is right in there with it. If you had one period on a regular basis that was there just to support you with yourself, with your friends, with your family, how much difference our whole society would have. So my attempt these days is to really be a part of the educational system, also to be part of the psychological system, and to have that simple premise be something that we all could be raised with, because it's not difficult if it's made a priority, especially young. If it hasn't been made a priority, especially young, and you've been living 30 or 40 or 50 or 60 years another way, then you have to counter all that motivation and momentum that's gone in another direction. And as I mentioned earlier, in a certain way, you deserve more credit, because if you have the courage to say, you know what, I did a lot of things right, but I still don't quite feel good. I wonder why. if you're aware enough to have that happen, I've seen it happen hundreds, if not thousands of times, where people who were not on a particular path of caring, and I'm saying that in a very simple way, so it would include everything from psychology to healthy politics, you know, there's some, to religion, to spirituality, to and being an environmentalist, to being somebody that cares about human issues. Then if you have that time, which some people would frame as a midlife crisis or a midlife opportunity, then good on you.
Yes.
Good on you.
Yes. midlife crises or, and it reminded me of several people that I've heard about that, they, in their midlife crises, they actually destroy their families and do crazy things because, they're not caring about the patterns and the foundation that they've built are now intent on finding something better after what they have experienced was quite satisfactory until they reached a certain point. Seems like a very selfish thing to do. It is amazing. And there are a lot of homes where the children, the infants, do not have that initial bonding with their parents or parent, and that can have a lasting effect upon a child. There are just so many things that impact our ability to connect to others that we become reticent in attempting to do that later on. Maybe we just simply don't know how or don't feel like, our self-esteem, I believe, comes to us when we are pretty young, when we're young, when that connection with a parent begins. If they lack the ability to show love and connection to a child, that child is going to be unable to appreciate their worth unless they really evaluate things later on.
Yeah, I mean, you could say that that's an early life crisis, in contrast to a midlife crisis. And what's so important is that most people need, if they've been shot in that path and on that trajectory of being motivated in other ways that involve any caring, is they need to be exposed to somebody that's caring. And if they are exposed to somebody that's caring and really don't lose faith in them and guide them to be interested in, well, if I was going to live my life from caring, how would I take the next steps right now? And one of the pieces of architecture would be, I'd spend a few more seconds every day, at least, in silence, asking myself that question, maybe even periodic commercials throughout the day, asking what would be the most caring response here, you know, how would I do that? And I think the key message that I really want to try to help promote is no one's disqualified, it's never too late, that caring is not something abstract, it's not some extreme esoteric religion. It's an intuitive place that's part of being human, that's often not modeled, and because of that, we lose touch with it. And if we can really ask ourselves, what is my experience right now, invariably, just even be in touch with your experience. If you're doing it in any kind of a soft-ish way, as I mentioned earlier, from a different angle, if we have difficult feelings, we intuitively start to sense, God, I'd like to make this easier. How can I make this easier? If I'm really insecure all the time, what do I need to do to support myself being more secure, you know, in life? Do I need to communicate better? Do I need to have a better tone of voice? Do I need to be more disciplined? Do I need to take care of my body better? Do I need to go to the doctor? You know, what are the simple little steps that I uniquely need to take from where I find myself in life where I could start to have faith and trust in myself that caring matters? Because at first, if caring hasn't mattered, you're going to say, oh, that's not who I am, as if who you've been is a reflection of who you can be, which it certainly is not. I'm not saying that more often than not it isn't, but I'm saying someone who's aware that they want to care can change the whole trajectory of their life if they're ready to see, you know what? I was shot out of the cannon from a set of motivations that now doesn't make intuitive sense to me, and I want to change that trajectory and move toward these 75 or whatever amount of qualities that you intuitively feel are going to be of most benefit to your life. And it's a very deep paradox. It's rarely understood, which is that when you're self-caring, it can look like it's narcissistic, but it's actually the opposite of narcissism. It's actually the epitome of self-caring, which will naturally, organically lead to caring for others, because if you're caring for yourself, it's contagious.
Absolutely. A narcissistic personality is somebody that thinks the world revolves around them. They can treat anybody any way that they wish. But somebody that actually cares for themselves is not going to treat others disrespectfully or with anger or with a self-centeredness. Caring for yourself is not being self-centered. Caring for yourself automatically includes loving others and caring for others. And a few weeks ago, I had someone on the program that was talking about some of the things that are going on in South Africa and about these individuals who simply go out with machetes and slash other people. And she told me after the program that because of the people who were doing all this destruction also had cut a lot of the utility lines and everything, that she actually had to drive 50 miles just to be on my program. And I thought, oh my gosh, that is the most amazing thing, that she really risked her own safety in order to tell people what was going on, and something very terrible was happening. And she risked her life and traveled 50 miles to do that. And I was so amazed that she would care so much about strangers that she would do this.
Yeah, it's wonderful to hear those kind of deep, caring stories, inspiring to us all.
Yes, it was very heartbreaking. And as I mentioned, we don't know what we don't know. And that is the reason that your list and your websites are so important for people to visit and to understand and to consider and to apply to themselves. And who would have thought that there were that many feelings?
Mm-hmm.
If you've only grown up with just experiencing a few feelings, most of which might be anger or, well, negative feelings, then you're not going to expand your horizons any further than what you know. And so you are giving the visitors to your website an opportunity to look at the possibilities with looking at these lists and thinking, oh, my gosh, I never would have thought of that as something that I would be able to feel or that I would be able to consider might add to my life or to the lives of the people I am in communication with.
I think a couple of things is that number one, I want to emphasize that it's free. It's really designed to try to support. A second thing is that the rest of the book is really developing strategies that every individual would have a different orientation as to which one they would like. But there's a chapter on asking yourself questions that are the types of questions that would guide you towards your heart. So they wouldn't be questions like, what's wrong with you? They would be questions like, what could be right with you if you did X, Y, Z, or how can you take care of yourself rather than why haven't you taken care of yourself?
Right. And
another chapter is oriented toward identifying the thought, the sentence that would really guide you in a way, your life. So.
Right. Okay, we're going to a quick 3-minute break and we'll be right back.
It starts with you and me. It starts with you and me. We all can be heroes if we take the lead to change the bad to good, to live in harmony. It starts with you and me.
All righty, we are back. We are back with our first guest today. Don't you love that song? Isn't that what you're saying?
Mm-hmm.
yeah, that's my the music that a listener provided me with some time ago, and it expresses my feelings pretty well that it does start with us. It starts with us as individuals. And we have to own our feelings. We have to own the behavior that we exhibit towards anybody.
Yeah, and I would slightly tweak that and say, if we're aware, we get to. It's not a pressure. It's a life gift for those that find it. It's like a treasure inside that if you see it as it is, you're going to want it badly. And it's not something that, is an imperative from the outside that some, alien has told us that we should do. It's something that if we listen quietly, it's kind of as simple as it reminds me of questions I used to ask my brother when I was about 5 or 6 years old. Would you rather feel good or would you rather feel bad? You know, would you rather freeze to death or would you rather burn to death? Just simple little questions like that where it's so obvious. Maybe the freezing and burning to death isn't as obvious, but the wanting to care versus not care, if you pause long enough in that place, there are going to be very few people that are going to choose not care. Problem is, they didn't have a support system that was modeling that and teaching that. And when we ourselves tune into that, it becomes a pretty intuitively obvious choice, not an external imperative.
Right. Yes, well, I'm just really impressed. And it really does, make you think of what you can do or how you can do it, how you can get from where you're at, no matter how old you are, to where you'd like to be. And, as you indicated, meditation is very important. You've been doing it for a long, long time. And, the world is so full of clutter and noise and technology that, a lot of people are communicating. They think they are communicating with hundreds more people when in fact they might be, but they're not making sound connections to those people. It's kind of a fake community, where you can talk to people across the world, but you're not very neighborly. Perhaps you don't know your neighbor, and perhaps you aren't even aware of the people who live in your house and should be really working on those connections, working on the relationships that are close at hand before you stretch out to include others, right?
Well, I think most of the time, yes. All of us are going to have people in our lives that really would be futile to put our precious energy.
All right.
With people that are truly impossible to connect with. It doesn't mean we still wouldn't give some effort, but I think part of the radar that needs to be developed is who could be allies that would identify with wanting to care, so we can set our radar on something that has a chance to multiply. I know when I look back at my background, there are going to be bullies. There are going to be people that are very dark, and some of them may even be in your family. And so you want to do your best not to create harm, but in many cases, you might be better placed to go to your friends or go to one member of your family and just to try to keep tuning into what's going to create some kind of, like that song talked about, some kind of harmony, some kind of peace, some kind of trust, some kind of sense of goodness that tangibly can be expressed in generosity, whether it's through something like recycling or whether it's through something like doing some kind of volunteer work or using your money in a different way than you expected. One of the things that I'm particularly emphasizing these days, I guess I'll get to it in a minute.
Okay, we'll pick this up on the other side. Be right back. We are back with our guest, Dr. Robert Strock. He is the author of Awareness That Heals, Bringing Heart and Wisdom to Life's Challenges. And the websites of interest are awarenessthatheals.org, theglobalbridge.org, and I invite you to visit both of those websites for a lot of I don't want to say free stuff, but a lot of valuable information that he has made available, not because he wants to he's not looking for money. His whole purpose seems to be, or is, to help other people to develop their awareness of how they can be better, more empathetic people, and to try to understand themselves, and in the process have more empathy for those around them and for others. So it's just delightful to be aware of these things and to have this experience of visiting your websites.
Thank you. So as I was mentioning, you know, right before the break, you know, the place that I'm really focusing on this last extended period beside the book is how each of us can use our resources practically as well. Money is often thought of as a vehicle toward a lifestyle, and money really is what I would call units of energy that can be used in a number of different ways. So it's a great method to use for compassion or caring or warmth or helpfulness. And tying that in, that's one level. And then another level is working with a number of foundations that, for example, there's a group called Every Table that we've donated a good deal of money toward, that is serving $5 supremely healthy meals in very poor neighborhoods on an individual takeout basis. They have a 10,000 square foot kitchen in Los Angeles, and then they have outlets in the poorest neighborhoods in Los Angeles, and they've orchestrated it to be a very low profit, very high social service, and using money for something like that is so amazingly, it might not be a word, gratitudinous, but it is so expansive because you see the benefit that people who are well-intentioned and smart, you know, they had four renowned chefs that organized, there's now, I think, about 15 retail outlets in Watts and Compton, which, if you don't know the LA area, are two of the poorer areas, as well as many others like that, with the intent of bringing that to the whole country and the inner cities and the areas that are poorest, so that people that are poor have access to a very, very balanced, healthy meal. We all have the power to do a little bit of good to support an organization like that, unless we're dealing with our own survival struggle, which obviously we've got to put our noble energy into that. But being able to tie that in and look for organizations that are doing good, being able to ally yourself in that way is something extremely fulfilling.
That sounds like just a most wonderful thing to do, because as you say, there are people in this country.
Yep.
Supposedly the richest quote unquote country in the world, and yet there are people who don't have the food that they need to be healthy, who do not have the things that we all kind of take for granted.
Yeah, for sure. And yeah, we're also working with several homeless programs and with everything from family reuniting to job opportunities, to gathering a space in a much more comprehensive plan, which is what we're in the middle of right now in Los Angeles, and looking to, an acreage site that would bring and identify people from the streets that don't have a home, that are most highly motivated, to be able to get the treatment they need, whether it's a practical opportunity to develop work, or whether it's to get off of certain kind of drugs or be treated for alcohol addiction, or in some cases identify with people that really can't function, but being able to serve the needs of that population. So again, there are a lot of good organizations wherever you find yourself, if you look for them.
Right. And we cannot say, oh, we cannot, should not be judgmental and say, well, it was just their lifestyle choices that put them in the situation that they're in. No, it's a lot of economic things that have happened within this country, the outsourcing of production, the trauma that people coming back from warfare that they have experienced. It is not always people's faults that they end up in a situation that they never intended to be in and can see no way out of. But with just a little bit of help, just a little bit of help and the caring of other people that can bring back some of their trust and make them feel worthwhile. I think that's just terrific. I just think that is so terrific that there are those programs.
Yeah, I want to really highlight what you're saying, that I think one of the biggest misunderstandings in the wealthier community especially is that, well, it's their choice. And it is such an illusion. I would say that there's probably 3% true, 97% false.
If
you look at vets that have come home, you look at people that were coming from families of abuse, you look at people that were chemically imbalanced through no fault of their own, just through genetics. There are so many good reasons why people are facing disabilities. And the more that's understood, the better chance there is the services will be provided.
And right.
What you're talking about is such a common myth that needs to be shattered. Because, you know, we do a program every year in Skid Row in LA and bring healthcare kits and warm clothing to, Skid Row residents. And it's been very, very enlightening in terms of seeing the segments of the population that are represented there. And early in my career, for example, I also worked with a great deal with schizophrenic patients. And the amount of people that are actually seriously mentally ill on the streets in LA are relatively small, maybe 25%. And there's no blame for that. I mean, they need help getting the right kind of chemistry in their body to have a chance just to survive well and maybe partially function. But then there's probably half are truly people who, if they were given the opportunity to have a work situation or mentorship, they would be able to get re-enrolled back into life. And especially if they were given some guidance, with work opportunities and potentially living opportunities. And that's the direction that we need to move in our culture.
Right. And these are not taxpayer-funded programs that you're talking about. These are just groups of people, such as your foundation, other foundations, that get together and do something good simply because it's the right thing to do. And so I think that's really remarkable. I think it's wonderful.
Yeah.
Really is.
Yeah. And there are some, we're actually just in the last few days, you know, interfacing with an organization that's partially government funded, that's giving very discreet housing, that having an Oxnard for vets that are homeless, that the government is putting some minimal funds into, and then foundations are joining it. So there are some partnerships that are available, that are between foundations and a limited amount of government funding that hopefully will be expanding. But it needs to be a combination of corporate foundation and government funding, because the need is that great, and it's becoming more and more obvious.
Right, and the government does have obligations to take care of or to assist in reestablishing veterans back to society, rather than neglecting them as they have done, which is just a terrible thing that they've done. And there's so many suicides, which I'm sure you're aware of these people who come back from warfare because of the trauma. I don't think that men, and this is not just the recent wars. This really has to do with anybody that has been in a war. It's very traumatic. I don't think that people are designed to kill one another, and the trauma of doing this is so dramatic that they it's very difficult for them to come back and think about what they saw, what they did, and there's a lot of suicides of these people, and I think that the government should take some ownership in that, in those rates. Absolutely.
Yep, and the effect that it's had on their families. And
right. Absolutely.
As well.
Right. When a veteran comes back, it really impacts the whole family. I had an uncle that was in World War II, and apparently he was just a regular person. But when he came back, and after he was, after he had children, he took his violence out on his children. And they were all girls, and he threw them against the wall and did unspeakable things that impacted their lives for all of their lives, and had, and that was before World War II. They weren't, I don't believe that they were really taking, well, I don't think they've ever taken care of the situation that they place people in a situation that they are not, would not choose for themselves. I don't think that men or women just decide, oh, I think I'm going to go over and kill some strangers in Afghanistan. They wouldn't do that any more than they would go next door and kill their neighbors. And it puts them in a different situation psychologically, and they really do need some help following that situation.
I don't think it would be an overstatement to say that going to war for almost everyone is like going through a torture chamber. And I think it would be far more evocative of compassion to not in any way glorify, but to empathize with being tortured yourself. And yeah, some people can come out of it. Some people are suited to be able to get through it, but many people aren't. And it's no critique to them. They've fought for what they believed in almost all circumstances were for our country. They put their life on the line, come back, and have various maladjustments or traumas that they're holding that maybe they're passing on, like you said, to their families as well. And we all who have not had to go through that would do well to contemplate, God, what if that was me? You know, and what would I want if I came back traumatized? I remember, you know, I was, you know, in the lottery system for the Vietnam War, and I knew I was going to apply to be a conscientious objector at that point, and I knew I would fail because there were two people that had succeeded in the Westwood Draft Board since World War II, and I had a good story, but not that good. And I was going to say, I'd be as reluctant, but just as soon kill Americans as kill Vietnamese that I don't have an axe to grind with. I don't believe in the war. I believe it's an unjust war, and I think it's, you know, based on mixed motives, as are most wars, and I'd separate out World War II as being one of the ones that wasn't. But basically most wars are mixed motive wars, and that's even more traumatic. I think it was a relatively easier war, from the point of view of at least you knew you were in it for the right reasons in most cases. Whereas if you're going into one of these other wars, it's a lot harder because you not only have to face death and trauma and horror, but you also have many times have to deal with your own conscience and split motives. And then you come back to a country that isn't, you know, that's divided as to whether they even support you. Like it's trauma on top of trauma, torture on top of torture. And it's very evocative of protection and caring if you take the time to sit back and say, God, how would that have been for me or anyone that I love?
Right.
Don't you want to protect them?
Right. And I think that, that the educational system, too, has to, do with preparing students to be obedient rather than to really think about the things that you've been talking about. If they had learned from kindergarten or from first grade to be caring for each other, caring for themselves, to develop the awareness of what they could do or should do is not there, unfortunately. Okay, we will be right back. Welcome back. Our guest the first 2 hours has been Dr. Robert Strock. That's Strock. He is the author of Awareness That Heals, Bringing Heart and Wisdom to Life's Challenges. The websites are awarenessthatheals.org and theglobalbridge.org. Anyway, it has been just delightful having you on the program and having you expand our minds to include things that perhaps we were not aware of previously.
Well, thank you for those kind words. It is a joy just to be able to have the opportunity to express myself, so thank you for creating such a good vehicle for that. I think one of the things that I would just add that I haven't really emphasized as much as I think it's sort of a tangible, simple thing is the power of tone of voice and how each of us would so benefit, you know, especially in our direct relationships as to how much power we have for bringing caring or bringing conflict into our worlds. And if we just spend a little bit of time dropping in and, you know, part of the list, identify equally that all those feelings can come through in tone of voice. And likewise, all those qualities of caring or warmth or empathy or tenderness, strength, all those can come through in our tone of voice. And that's a level, again, in kindergarten or first grade that would be understood by young people, maybe even better than old people. But none of us are too old to understand that. And if we do get that, it brings us another possible way to bring caring into our world.
That's a whole nother topic.
Yes.
That can be expanded. The tone of our voice,
yeah,
really does give people a clue of what inner feelings that the speaker might be having.
Exactly.
Oh my gosh.
And right. Such an effect is, it's like as a counselor, I would say it's responsible for half of the conflicts in a love relationship and half of the breakthroughs that occur. Because somebody becomes aware that they're belittling or sarcastic or superior or inhibited or unentitled or over-entitled. the tones are so impactful. And if we can stay aware of that and try to find a place inside us that does care more, it's not just a matter of cosmetic shift. It's a matter of going inside a little bit and wanting to care. And tone is one of the ways that we can truly manifest it in our lives.
Wow. That is something that we really do need to consider.
Yeah.
Is the tone of our voice. And even if we think that we're being simple and using the appropriate words, it's the delivery that really counts.
Exactly.
And it subconsciously gives a message.
Sure does.
It really wow.
does. Yeah. It's a big, impactful thing.
Wow. What a revelation.
Yeah.
What a joy it's been to have you on the program.
Well, thank you. Likewise, I've enjoyed being on the program and wish it total empowerment to continue.
Well, thank you so much and bless your heart for doing all the things you're doing. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Take care.
You too.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.